Sweet Barbary by Pamela Kent, read by Heather Henriques. Chapter 1. From the window of the train that had brought her from Tangier to Rabat, Catherine had been surprised to see that the country, as a result of heavy winter rains, was almost as green as England in April. There had been so many shades of green too, from the bright green of corn and maize to the duller hue of peach groves, the silver green of olives and eucalyptus, and the sombre green of cypresses. She had been amazed because there was so much evidence of cultivation in a land that she had expected to find dried up and groaning beneath the fierce kiss of an unkind sun. And the only things that had struck her as entirely new were the storks nesting in treetops and on every second house roof. But that had been in the train between Tangier and Rabat, and now she was in a hot bus chugging along a hot coast road, and the face of nature seemed to have undergone a complete change. On one hand, there was a brilliant blue Atlantic, and on the other, the vegetation really was sparse and as dried up as anything she had imagined beforehand. There were occasionally dusty palms and houses of whiteness that made her eyes ache. And before the bus journey was half over, she was the victim of a blinding headache. Catherine had decided she had not been wise over the way she had planned this journey, or Vicky might have warned her that it was the sort of journey one ought to be recklessly extravagant about. As it was, she had thought she had been rather clever in saving herself the cost of a full fare to Morocco by looking after the Pattersons' children as far as Marseille, and then crossing to Tangier at her own expense. The one thing she hadn't reckoned with was the extraordinary weakness that clung to her after her bad bout of pneumonia, the real reason why she was visiting Morocco at all. And the Patterson children had required constant vigilance and more or less exhausted her, which was absurd since she was a second-year nurse who hoped one day to get through her finals and wear a sister's belt around her slim middle. At that moment, that middle was so slim that the belt would have swung in half circles unless she fastened it so tightly that a patient's confidence would have been likely to ebb at the sight of her. No, Vicky ought to have warned her. Vicky ought to have said, "Fly and never mind the cost." But at least Vicky would be there to meet her when the bus finally docked, if and when it did decide to dock somewhere and this torturous white road should come to an end. Catherine stared at the sea. It seemed to her to have an oily swell, in spite of the fact that the water itself was as blue as a blaze of larkspur. And on it, the sun's path danced like a myriad demons, clothed in nothing but diamond points. The arc of sun above the sea was an even deeper blue, a harder, more relentless blue, and she wondered whether it would soften with the coming of the night. She could picture the night swooping down and gathering up the diamond points and transferring them to a high place in the heavens, where they would weld together until they were stars as large as the Koh-i-Noor diamond. The thought took her breath away for a moment, for she had never yet seen stars like that, not even on the crossing from Marseille, and this was the Barbary Coast of Africa. But the confusion of stars in the midst of so much increasing heat and so much violent glare, whichever way she looked, caused her to give her head a little shake, as if she feared she was feeling the effects of the sun, because she was stupid enough to have packed her dark glasses away in one of her suitcases. Instead, she thought of Vicky, and tried to concentrate on the moment when they would fly into one another's arms, and her sister would ignore any damage to her makeup in the enthusiasm of welcoming a member of her own family at last. For Vicky had been married for more than a year, and so far not even one of her closest friends had made the acquaintance of her husband, André Lebrun. All that was known about him was that he was extremely comfortably off, and that a large portion of his income was derived from the canning and exporting and so forth of things like sardines, which were washed up in shoals on this brilliant coast. No doubt he had other sources of obtaining the wherewithal to keep such an elegant creature as Vicky in the luxury she adored, and the fact that she had been willing to give up a promising career as a model in order to marry him spoke for itself. For Vicky had said she would never marry for love alone, and she would never marry for wealth alone, so apparently she had been fortunate enough to combine the two.